And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's Just Something I've Noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show from the Uniden America Studios. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, forget about plane parts falling out of the sky. This was my favorite airline story of the week.
Yeah?
Not in a positive way. An Indonesian airliner is under investigation after two of its pilots fell asleep mid-flight for nearly 30 minutes while 159 passengers were on board.
Wow.
The incident report from the country's National Transportation Safety Committee found that the flight diverted from its path during a January 25th flight after two of its pilots dozed off for 28 minutes. The mid-air nap came during a two-and-a-half-hour flight. It was an Airbus 320.
Wow.
On those all the time. The 32-year-old pilot in command fell asleep for an hour after notifying his 28-year-old deputy. The pilot awoke and asked his second-in-command if he would like to trade places, an offer he refused. The pilot then awoke 28 minutes later and found that the aircraft was not on the correct flight path and that the second-in-command had also fallen asleep. The pilot managed to get the plane back on track and to land safely in Jakarta with no harm to the passengers. While they were asleep, air traffic attempted to contact them numerous times, but there was no response from the pilots.
So what did they do in the meantime? I mean, if you don't get a response from an aircraft and then you see it's off course and you just do nothing about it, did they not?
Doesn't say.
Huh. Wow.
The second in command, the guy that was awake the most but then fell asleep during the other 28 minutes that the pilot was asleep.
Yeah.
Said he'd been struggling to get enough sleep after helping his wife take care of their one-month-old twins at home.
Mm-hmm.
Both pilots have been temporarily suspended. They need pilots.
Wow. Wow. You know, as far as I know, they still make coffee. As far as I know, it's still legal.
Well, to think I've never fallen asleep here on the air. I would think that if I was a pilot and still tired.
Our production crew gets some pretty good rest between 1 and 4 a.m. But
that my training would make it so I could do it, but I don't know how I would go in to fly a plane if I was like I am when I need to go to sleep, which is I'm tired and need to go to sleep.
Yeah. I can't do this right now. Need to go home.
There's a lot of questions because the questions that are being answered in the or asked in that story, or you know, by just casual observers, well, how did they get off track?
Right. And what
if they had? Was the autopilot wrong? What happened? They got off course.
What action was taken? Who was watching them?
Yeah.
Who was monitoring? You know,
that happens in the United States. And you know, and I go back to Payne Stewart's small aircraft.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I remember that day.
You know, but I remember that day too. Wow, I was on the air during that time. I don't remember if I was on the air when it crashed, but I was on the air when they discovered it.
Well, because you there are a couple of things. You first of all have to believe something is wrong, which that indeed was the case. It could be catastrophic, which it could have been the case for all on board. Or there is something more nefarious going on.
Right, because when you get here's the thing I don't understand. Can't most airlines on modern planes contact the flight attendants?
Yeah. I think they can, right?
Can they
call directly and bypass the cockpit? The cockpit?
The only reason I'm saying that is, didn't that happen with the flight attendant at 9/11 calling authorities? Or calling the airlines? Not authorities, but calling their own airlines?
I know that they can call out. Can they be called without going through the cockpit?
I mean, that's another question to be asked.
Yeah.
Because the first thing you're thinking of is that the cabin's been depressurized. That's what you're thinking.
Yes.
Just like the Payne Stewart plane.
Right, exactly.
So immediately when that happens, you know, you're talking 28 minutes and you don't have jet scrambled.
Right.
And it is Indonesian Airlines, so it's a major airline. Mm-hmm. Nobody's scrambling fighter jets. We need to check this plane out.
Yeah, that was my first question.
And it might have happened. We don't know. I mean, we might not be getting the information.
I think that would be part of the story, but it's not in this story, at least. I mean, I would think that would be a crucial part of the reporting. Because you immediately think something's wrong. And the best way to investigate that is to scramble some fighter jets, get them up so they can put eyes on it and see what's going on with the crew. Now, here's the question. If they were to have done that, what would the crew notice? They would have noticed.
They were asleep.
They were
unconscious.
Could have looked exactly like the Payne Stewart situation, which is what happens when the entire cabin depressurizes.
Except no frost on the window.
Right. Yeah, right. I guess that would be the tell. Well,
would you also
look at passenger windows, and if you saw people moving
in
the cabin,
right,
then you could see that it's just them and they're asleep.
I'm going to say you get one of the fuel tanker planes to take the end of the hose and, like, hit the flight deck window.
Yeah.
Wake up, guys.
Yeah, or the nose or something. Something.
It's something.
I mean.
God.
Well, okay. Now, the question about the crew. Any of the flight attendants? Were they banging on the door? I mean, did they?
Yeah, that's another question, yeah.
For a half hour, did it? Well, is it typical that a half hour would pass without them having to go to the cockpit for anything?
You know, I fly all the time, and you just don't think of these things. Still, when, you know, if they're serving lunch or if the pilot or first officer has to go to the bathroom, you know, they take that food cart and they move it in front. So nobody can, they still do it today, so nobody can rush.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always, you know, I'd see one of them come out, and then one of the flight attendants would go into the flight deck, and they close the door.
Right.
While the pilot or first officer's in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that's the law. They have to go in.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have anybody in that flight deck alone.
Right.
In the cockpit alone.
Right.
And is that because of pilot suicide?
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
But that's why that is. I mean, that's why apparently they send them in.
Hmm.
I didn't know that.
Hmm.
I was like, why do the flight attendants keep walking in? And when yeah, one pilot comes out, they walk in there, and it's like, oh, okay.
Too many unanswered questions here in this story.
Well, from now on, I want my pilot talking every 5 minutes.
Or nonstop. Is that too much to ask?
Nonstop. Because I'm always flying early in the morning or late at night. All right, now after we take off, we're going to lower the lights, and I won't be saying anything here for the next couple of hours.
Yeah.
So you can get some sleep. And the last thing we want to do is bother you.
And could you keep it down back there?
Yes. Could you keep it down there? We're going to catch 40 winks up here.
Right.
We want everybody at least in coach. We'd like you asleep.
Exactly.
You've got free drinks in first class, so you folks can stay awake.
Yeah.
But don't yell. No drunken yelling. We're trying to catch a few winks up
here. There's so much that's missing from this story.
I know.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. You know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Did you see the other one that some of the analysis, and it's the same analysis that the FBI did. Apparently a guy's written a book on it. Flight expert, Malaysia 370.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That it was pilot suicide. And you see what they said? That you know why you didn't get any debris? Because the pilot, they believe, landed it, you know, as, you know, didn't crash it straight in, but landed it where the biggest trench is in the Indian Ocean, but sort of landed it on the water so it didn't break apart, only a small, remember, they didn't find major pieces, so it wouldn't break apart, and the whole thing would sink. And they say the FBI sort of agrees with that analysis that that's what happened, because there's no other explanation.
Right. Otherwise, those pieces, if it had...
And the pilot
disintegrated. Yeah. You'd see so many pieces float.
Right, right. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, and it was only a few pieces that they found.
Yeah, and they said because of the position of one of it had to be set that way, and so they believe that's how it was set to land. You know, so it didn't crash in where it broke into a million pieces.
Right,
but it hit, bounced, and then just sank down. Right. They said like it was like the Hudson River.
Right.
The Hudson River land is what they... And he did it on purpose.
Right.
You know, it was murder-suicide.
Right.
And that they said... And I forgot which one it was, the pilot or the first officer, they said did it. Got great enjoyment out of it. Mm. That the evidence they have is that it's something that he, you know, that with the evidence or whatever, communications... letters, whatever he wrote, that's they didn't get into, and I want details on that one, but then again, that's what makes me read the book.
Right. Yeah, sure. Right.
Tell me everything. There's no reason. Yeah, that's just weird.
Yeah. It's scary too. It's just the thought of being on a flight like that and then just flying into the abyss, basically. which is what happened. Just into the darkness, and then all of a sudden, you know you're not going where you're supposed to be going. The passengers, many of them had to have known that something was very wrong. Because the flight crew, the pilots will come on. If there is something and you're veering off course, whatever, pilots are quick to tell you, hey, here's what's going on, and we're going to correct it by doing this. Just sad, scary.
Yeah, you would have to, you know, I again, you talk about what causes suicide to begin with. I don't know. I mean, it's not thoughts I had, but on YouTube, for example, I see all the celebrities. It's amazing. YouTube has all these little things, and it makes you sit up and notice and go, whoa, all the celebrities that have committed suicide over the years. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, so money's not the solution, huh?
Yeah.
Money isn't the answer to all life. And you look at it, and you're like, all right, all these celebrities, and you and I were just talking about some rock stars that committed suicide and all that, mm-hmm. You look at it and you're like, okay, what causes people to do that? And you just assume that if you're a well-trained pilot, that's not something that's on your mind, correct?
Right.
People look at airplane pilots as some of the greatest respect out there.
If suicide were on your mind, killing other people.
People would not be. Right. Right. And again, you're talking super rare events. Mm-hmm. You think of that one, then the Egyptian airliner off of Long Island.
Yeah.
Remember that one? Mm-hmm. Egypt was furious at the United States, and still today the United States says, no, that was pilot suicide. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. So.
Yeah, I'm dying to know what happened here with this flight where two pilots fall asleep and then can't be reached for a period of time.
Do they have to put alarm clocks where you can wake them up?
Well, or you're going to have a cockpit check by other flight crew members every 10 minutes or something, every 15 minutes. I mean, you would think that would be the case. Wow.
Yeah, they're working on putting distracted driver.
Yeah.
Distracted driver technology into cars.
Yeah.
Which will read your eyes if you're starting to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could use that on planes.
Maybe on planes first.
Yeah. Let's try that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This morning's USDA Farm Report is brought to you by Howe's Products. Tested, trusted, guaranteed since 1920.
USDA's World Ag Supply and Demand Forecast on Friday had some interesting information, including another reduction in the prospects for the Brazilian soybean crop.
But I wouldn't say, in general, there are big shocks to this report.
USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says it was along the lines of what was expected.
I think that there's a lot of interesting changes within this report, kind of, making some changes in Argentina or Brazil with respect to, corn and soybeans, and cutting global production for soybeans a little bit this month and cutting corn production a little bit this month as well, too, on a global level.
Right after the report was issued, corn and bean futures did go up slightly.
You're up a penny on corn. You're up 6 cents on beans.
But Meyer says he does not think this report would be enough to prompt a U.S. producer to change his or her plans for spring planting. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This report brought to you by Cenex Fuels and Lubes.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You see, we were the IBM vice chair, was on the Sunday morning news shows this week. It was on Face the Nation.
Mm.
He had to explain inflation. We'll have that audio coming up on the bottom of the hour, but it's like, jeez, I mean, it's just something. It's like,
it's something we have said, things, points that we have made, and but sometimes you have to break it down like you're talking to children when you're on shows like that, you know, over the weekend, because you're dealing with children.
And what he simply said was to explain inflation, like why don't Americans see, you know, well, because if inflation was 9% 2 years ago, 7% last year, and 3% now, that 3% is on top of everything else. It's based on that, you know, it compounds out.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, like they were seeing it for the first time. And they've shaped it into the propaganda that it is today, so they have to play like they didn't know. Either that or they're clueless. It's one or the other.
And a couple more things, too, on the whole no labels party thing. Mm-hmm. I started thinking about that. We had some discussion on it. As they're moving forward, they have no idea where they're going to go, but they're moving forward. We can't tell you too much because everything's secret.
I'm going to start a no labels food company. It's all canned. It's only in cans. I'm not going to tell you what's in it.
Oh, man.
Got to buy it. You have to buy it to see what's in it.
But
I'll get Nancy Pelosi to sell it.
But the question's really, I'll tell you what the question is, though. For no labels, the question is, where will you actually stand on the issues?
Right.
What will be a centrist position on the radical transgender movement?
Right. Where's the compromise? Where's the middle ground?
Common sense solution for critical race theory that says all whites are culturally racist?
Right. Where's the middle ground on any of these items?
Where's the middle ground, huh? Where's the middle ground? What's the middle ground on Hamas and Israel?
Right. And don't say ceasefire.
That's not middle ground, no.
No.
And analyzing the insanity, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara, nightly on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here this morning. As always, we appreciate it. You can download our Red Eye Radio app and listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. All right, where did I get, where'd it go here? I want to get here it is. Mm-hmm. Here's the audio I wanted to play. This was IBM Vice Chair Gary Cohen on Face the Nation to talk about inflation and why it's a problem, the compounding effect of it.
But the president is tapping into at least a perception that wealthy people have far more of an advantage, and that corporations are taking advantage of the little guy. I mean, he went down to the 10% fewer Snickers in the bag analogy in his speech, basically saying you're getting ripped off. So what do you make of that idea, though, and the explanation he's trying to make for why people are experiencing inflation, even though the rate is coming down?
Well, let's talk about inflation for a minute, because I think it's a really important concept for everyone to understand. Inflation has a compounding effect, meaning as you look at inflation year over year, you're adding up those numbers. You're not starting at a zero every year. So if we had 6% inflation last year, 7% inflation, and now we have 4% inflation, that's 10% inflation. So if you take a basket of groceries at the beginning of 2020, just a simple basic basket that cost $100, it costs well over $125 today, because those 4% 1 year and 7% 1 year and 7% the next year, they add up. They're cumulative. So there's a huge cumulative effect inflation.
So when people are being told, consumers, you're wrong, inflation's heading, no, they're right.
They're completely right. They're completely right. And what they're more right about is we at least finally have gotten to the position where wage growth is faster than inflation. But we had not been there till the last few months. So yeah. People were losing purchasing power, and that's why people were angry. And then take on top of that the high interest rate environment, where if you thought you might have been in a position to buy a house because you save money, you go out to get a mortgage at 7 or 8%, you can't afford a house. Mm-hmm. So people got very frustrated because the cost of their everyday lives got very expensive, and the cost of investing in their future by buying a home got nearly impossible.
I think one point he's wrong, and I think last month wages went down because of inflation.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, I think he's wrong on that one. I think I know there's been some months where they've been catching up, but overall it's still down.
Yeah,
from when inflation started. He actually talked about the fact of he appeared on CBS's Face the Nation to dispel how Biden tried to tap into the perception that the wealthy have greater advantages than the little guy. After Biden claimed that billionaires pay a lower tax rate than teachers and proposed slapping a minimum tax of 25% on billionaires, he said, quote, if you actually look at who pays taxes in this country, the bottom 50% of earners in the United States pay 2.6% of tax collected, and the top 10% pay over 70% of taxes collected in this country, Cohen said, adding that this is in large part thanks to how the Trump administration redid the tax code in 2017, and Eric and I can verify that.
Mm-hmm.
Our taxes went up.
Yeah.
Cohen then identified, and believe me, we are not billionaires, even though that one caller said we were one time.
Right. No, I'm not.
And I wish he was right.
Yeah.
Because I'd be sitting here in this little studio with Eric if I was a billionaire.
Right.
Or
somebody else. Yeah.
At 4:38 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Cohen then identified a problem with Biden's talking point about billionaires, noting that a billionaire is a measure of net worth, not a description of one's taxable income. Ooh. You could be a billionaire and have no taxable income.
True story.
You could not have a billion and have a high taxable income.
True story.
He said that's because some people may be sitting on assets, some of which may be liquid or not liquid. We do a very good job in this country of taxing income. There is no income in this country unless you buy a tax-free bond that doesn't get taxed at a minimum of 20%, whether it's interest or dividends or in capital gains. So there's no billionaire in this country that has an income that is not paying at least 20%. Hmm. So he's talking about that, capital gains, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have $1 billion in income, What are you paying in federal tax if you have $1 billion in taxable income? You're paying close to $400 million in federal taxes alone if you make that in a year.
Yeah,
if it's income,
right? Federal taxes alone. Yeah,
yeah, you're paying $400 million,
mm-hmm.
roughly.
Right.
If that's your taxable income,
if that's the taxable income.
Right. And we immediately said it when Biden said they're paying 8%. It's like, well, no. That you're talking wealth versus income. And God help us if the government ever gets to tax property.
They're trying.
They're trying. And I mean, you know, the middle class. And I've no idea why still the Democrats are able to sell that corporations need to pay their fair share. I have no idea how people cannot understand. And how the poor and lower middle class, maybe that's why they're moving towards Republicans. Maybe they do understand about corporate taxes. But that's the biggest con game that Democrats have been promoting to people for the last 40 years.
It's a great hidden tax for them, right. But for the Democrats, they know it.
They love it. You're paying it, and it hurts the poor, and it hurts the poor the most.
Corporations don't pay taxes. We've been saying it for years. Corporations do not pay taxes.
You do.
The consumer does.
Yep. You pay it in the cost of the product.
Yep.
No, you don't. Yeah, example, gasoline.
Yep.
Rest my case. Continue. Continue arguing.
All of it. That's where, you know, it's about their revenue, and they get their revenue from you, so it's passed on to you.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been something we've covered for a long, long time. Well, it's a very basic principle of taxation.
It's the idiocy of Biden's, you know, $8 late fee.
Hmm.
By the way, we have on Red Eye Radio, since the president wishes to get rid of junk fees, we, with the help of the sarcasm of the Wall Street Journal, agree with them that there should be no fines for paying your taxes late.
Right.
You pay your taxes late, the interest and everything, that's reprehensible what the government is doing. The government, Biden's administration, is throwing junk fees at you.
That's right.
When it's hard enough to pay your taxes.
Yep.
The Biden administration is throwing junk fees at you.
Right.
If you're late on your parking tickets, junk fees.
Yep. Yep.
And he's calling people who are not from this country and are not citizens, he's saying they're undocumented.
They have documents.
As if they don't exist. Forget about it. He's evolved from illegal, but illegal, at least you're a person.
Right.
You're just in the status of legal or illegal in this country. He wants to call you, and Democrats wish to call you, undocumented. You're not even documented. Here are the documents. They're not documented. Take them off.
That's reprehensible.
Reprehensible. These mean. Something phobic. Democrats.
They're.
I had a Biden moment. I couldn't think of it, so I came up with something phobic. That's a Biden moment.
Traveler phobic? I don't know. We're going to have to come up with something. Got to work on that one.
Newcomer phobic.
Newcomer. Yeah. Calling them. They were using that new term, newcomers. Newcomer phobic.
All right, very quickly here, because the No Labels Party is trying to keep everything secret, their whole nominating process, who's on their board secret, who their donors are,
who
their candidates are.
Well, the candidate isn't so much a secret as it is non-existent.
Well, okay then. That may be technically correct.
Yeah. Shh, don't tell them.
But I love when they talk about common sense solutions. Okay, let's start. Mm-hmm. As we already addressed here before the bottom of the hour, what's a common sense solution on men playing women's sports?
Right. What would that be?
That's a federal issue now because of Title IX.
Yep.
What's your common sense solution there? What's your common sense solution of critical race theory that whites are culturally racist to the point that society must be set up to assume that all whites are culturally racist, which is almost like in their DNA, which is critical race theory thinks. What's your common sense solution to that one? All right, let's go to the budget.
Ah.
We know the budget's out of control. What is your common sense solution to the federal debt?
Right. What would it be?
What would it be? No labels. Now, it's tough. See, these are the tough things. They don't have a candidate because how you form a political party is, this is where we stand. Which candidates believe these things that we believe in?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we believe in. We're looking for candidates.
Yeah.
We don't know. We have no idea what the candidates believe.
Yeah, we don't know.
It's everywhere from what? Lynn Cheney to Mitt Romney to who on the Democrats? Oh, Joe Manchin?
Mm-hmm.
What's the common sense? Anybody who is not in politics, any economist will tell you, worth their salt, that you have to redo entitlements.
Yeah.
If you don't do it, it's not common sense.
Right.
I mean, what's common sense? Okay, we need to be in debt, but we only need to be in debt $100 billion a year, $200 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
What's common sense?
Yeah.
By the way, these are the questions you have to ask, which is why they're avoiding all of it.
They can't answer these questions. because then you have to take a position. We've been saying since the beginning, you have to take a position because it will start with questions, and questions need answers, and you have to take a stance on something. What do you stand for?
Yeah, what's your position on EVs?
Yeah, mandates or no?
Boy, we'll do it on tomorrow's show. Some of the article written and some of the stories about Norway and what they're dealing with, even though they sold a ton of electric cars, they're still using just as much. Well, they sold a ton of electric cars in 1 year, like 64% of the cars, but no decrease in fossil fuels at all. It's like because people are just driving their gasoline vehicles longer and more.
Right.
And that, a survey from Norway?
Mm-hmm.
You would have to drive your EV battery would have to last 45 years, I believe it is.
Right.
In order to make up for the carbon dioxide that you use.
Yeah. Sounds like they're doing all of the math instead of part of the math.
Yeah. What's your solution there on what's your solution on the grid?
Right. Where do you stand?
You keep saying common sense dictates that you should let us see your common sense solutions. You shouldn't hide. Common sense, you shouldn't be hiding.
Well, common sense to me means if you're talking about the budget and the debt, you got to spend less. Well, is that common sense to them?
No. It would be a mixture of tax increases on the rich,
uh-huh. A blend,
and spending cuts in as possible goals in the future.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not a common sense solution. That's the Democratic Party,
right?
And part of the Republican Party.
Part of the Republican Party, yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. What I'm really looking forward to, Eric, is more details on what the Republicans, what Georgia Republican Barry Loudermilk came out with yesterday or over the weekend about the January 6th committee allegedly suppressing testimony showing the Trump administration pushed for a National Guard presence on January 6th. That's really interesting because they have the transcript, and they say they have it there, and they say that now Liz Cheney said it's a lie, but I'm not sure what part of it's a lie, that they hid that part of the transcript, or they destroyed that part of the transcript,
or the transcript doesn't exist.
And so that's fascinating because I think if that comes out, that I know that insurrection isn't on Jack Smith's itinerary going after Trump. But that in itself would show the intent of what Trump wanted, you know, on that day, what to do legally. And then it's down to, well, so if you tell a vice president to do something that you believe is legislative, that becomes a criminal act. It takes it down to that basis, which is a tough one that I think would never fly on appeal.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.